In this episode, I talk to actor Roger Davies, aka Vinny Rodriguez from the Renford Rejects, about his career in the show and what he's done since then. Alan Snyder is our guest in the empty compartment, and we've also got Hayley taking part in today's quiz, all on today's 90s and Noughties UK podcast, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can tweet us at 90snoughtiesuk on Twitter. You can also email us 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, or just go to the Facebook page 90sandnoughtiesuk. Well, there we are. We begin this week's show with a small monologue from me, but don't worry, we will get to the meat of the episode in just a short while. But before we do, I'd like to say thank you so much for the support that I have received via social media. It's been great to hear people's memories of this period, and it's great as well to see people embracing the rather experimental attitude of this podcast, the fact that we do lots of different things. So today we've got an interview with actor Roger Davies. We'd normally have a round table on some episodes. There will be more of those to come in the future, so if you're a fan of those, please do stay tuned. We've got the empty compartment, our third guest, Dr. Alan Snyder, joining us all the way from the United States, New York to be exact. And the thing that you will find by listening to that is that this podcast is called 90s and Noughties UK, and I was initially quite unsure about whether to include people from other countries in something about UK pop culture, but the fact is UK pop culture has reached all over the world in some cases, or in certain examples it hasn't. And that's what you'll hear when you listen to The Empty Compartment. That's later, and then we're going to be finishing off this episode with a brand new feature. It's not Jamie's final bit, decided to rest that, not quite interesting enough for me, let alone you. We've got a quiz which I'm tentatively calling the Quick Fire Quiz, with roundtable regular Hayley, who very kindly said, yeah, I like 90s and noughties pop culture. I'll come on and try and answer as many questions as I can in 90 seconds. And it's a great thing. I love it. It was very fun to do, and I look forward to hearing your comments on that. And if you'd like to be a guest on anything, whether on a round table, perhaps in an interview, or maybe even Empty Compartment, or even the Quick Fire Quiz, then please do get in contact with us, because everybody is welcome here. And if you don't feel like you've quite found a place within what we've currently got in place, let me see if I can accommodate you in some way and get you on the podcast. Because the thing is, there are things even I haven't thought of for this podcast, and I think about it quite a lot. So before we get into this week's featured interview with actor Roger Davies from the Renford Rejects, Family Affairs, and most recently Cloverfield on Netflix as well, here is this week's postbag. So this week's post-bad question, to tie in with this week's interview, was, have you ever met someone from a 90s or 2000s Nickelodeon show? And if so, when? A couple of answers to this question. One from at Daily Nick News, a regular contributor to the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, said, I very nearly met Kel from Kenan and Kel when he came to the UK. He was in the reception of Nickelodeon UK's studios, and I, P, picking up Nickelodeon postcards, etc., was too nervous to walk over and say hi. And I must say, you should have done. I'm sure he would have been very grateful for that. And Erica says that she met the cast and creator of Fairly Odd Parents at a podcast taping. And she says the most random was Jeffrey Lincoln, the older brother on the Brothers Garcia, at a Hard Rock during a concert. He was sick, but still was kind enough to let me snap a picture. And I would love to see that picture, Erica. Do get in contact with us and let me see that picture. I'd love to see it. And thank you very much to everyone who contributed to this week's edition of Postbag. Keep an eye on our social media for further questions. This is the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, and I'm delighted to be joined by actor Roger Davies, whose name may ring a bell for a number of reasons, some of which we're going to be talking about today. Of course, I remember him as Vinnie Rodriguez in the Nickelodeon series Renford Rejects, a subject which we've covered quite a lot on the podcast. We interviewed Bill Homewood and Tom Weller some time ago, and I'd be very much looking forward to hearing some stories about his time on the show. But first, Roger, you're not just an actor. I heard you're also a dancer. What was it like dancing on Top of the Pops back in the day?
Wow. Do you know what? So it was funny because for me, it was like, that was like my part time. So I loved acting, but if I wasn't working for a while, then I would dance. And so, yes, I remember going on tour with Mel B for a while, which was a lot of fun. And then it's funny because now, like, Top of the Pops and those shows don't exist anymore. So I wonder, like, what artists perform on now. Is it more like chat shows now, I guess?
I think it is chat shows, yeah, and the like that exist. In Britain, we're just starting to see the early 90s, about the time that you would have been on them. Because they repeat them.
That's right. Because there was, like, Top of the Pops, there was the Pepsi chart show, the other ones were like chat shows, like Live and Kicking and other things. But that was a good time. I was actually talking to one of my friends about it the other day, and we were reminiscing about the days that we did Top of the Pops and were on tour dancing. It was definitely a lot of fun.
Well, it sounds like it was an interesting time. Now, as I make reference to, you were Vinnie Rodriguez in the Renford Rejects. How did you get that opportunity?
Oh, that was incredible. I'll never forget that. So I remember my agent at the time was like, oh, there's an audition for this Nickelodeon show called Renford Rejects. And I was like, huh, okay. So she sent me the information. I remember going to do my first audition, and it was like a big speech. It was like, hi, I'm Vinnie Rodriguez, and did it. And I was like talking about some game stuff. So I did that audition. And then I think maybe like a few weeks went by, and then I got like a recall. So I met Stephen Baywell, the director, and I think it was Howard Litz. Howard, his last name began with L. And he was the head of Nickelodeon. And so I went to Nickelodeon for my final audition. And I did it with him and Stephen. And I remember I finished doing my scene. And I went to shake hands. And I remember like knocking over this coffee that went like everywhere, all down the table. I was like, brilliant. I was like, sorry. They're like, hey, it's fine. Don't worry about it. So I was like, oh my goodness. So I left. And then I remember getting the train back to, I'm from Essex. So I got the Central Line back to Loughton. And I got home and my mum was like, hey, we got some good news. And I was like, what? She went, oh, you got the part of Vinnie Rodriguez. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. She was, yeah. I was like, oh my God, that's incredible. It was so bizarre that I must have left, and then they decided, yep, that's the guy, and then called my agent, and then agent called my parents. But that's the days when I didn't have a mobile phone. It was all house phone, you know. So, but yeah, I was so excited. I couldn't wait to start the journey.
And you are, if I may say so, an integral part of that show. You were kind of the glue that kept it all together.
Yeah. It was, I look back at those days and it was like, such a great time. because it was the first scripted show for Nickelodeon, so we felt like you felt like you were part of something fresh, something new. And yeah, it was just such a great job.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what's your kind of what are your memories of shooting that show? Because it must have been quite complicated, because a lot of the time you were holding a camera and they were using scenes from that camera as well as whatever shots that they were using, crane shots and such. It was quite complicated, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I remember the camera guy, Pierre Boffetti, the French guy. And so he'd be like, we would record on my camera and he'd make sure that I was holding it right and filming properly. And then, yes, then they would film with the regular cameras. But yeah, it always got me. No, the frame's not right. The frame's not right. And I'm like, sorry, Pierre. Sorry, Pierre. I'm not a cameraman, but okay. But I learned quickly. So yeah, I got it down in the end.
As we heard from Tom and Bill, the way that they shot it was quite unusual to other shows, because a lot of the scenes were just one continuous shot. That must have been quite difficult to learn all those lines and movements and such.
Yeah, because the timing was so important, because, like, you know, they'd be playing a game and then, like, the camera would have to be in a certain place. Then on a certain part of the game, I'd have to start my dialogue and time it perfectly with the camera movement and the game. And yeah, so there was a lot of choreography for sure. But, you know, we would rehearse quite a bit, and I just hope that didn't mess up.
Well, I've from watching it, and I'm continually rewatching it, certainly at the moment during the current situation, and the rapport that you have with the rest of the cast members, it just leaps off the screen.
Oh, I mean, it was great. Like, a lot of us lived together at the time when we were shooting, because, you know, we'd have really early call times. And so there was a house just around the corner from where we shot in Kensal Green. And so we'd stay there. But we all just like liked each other. So, like, we all like hung out outside of the show. You know, on the weekends we would go out and stuff. And so I think that, like, reflected on screen.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was definitely that that kind of group mentality that I think you needed, because it was a show with some now quite famous actors, including yourself, really the start for a lot of you, wasn't it?
Oh, massively. I remember at the time we started, and Paul Paris, that played Bruno, you know, we'd go out everywhere and he'd always get recognized because he was on Grange Hill. So I remember he was like, yeah, he was the man. We were like, oh my God, we want to get recognized as well. But then obviously when the show came out, yeah. But yeah, Paul was. And then Matthew Leach. I know that was afterwards. I'm thinking. But yeah, at that time it was Paul Paris. He was the man.
That show also, as I've said previously to other guests and such, there were a lot of guest stars. And of course, your character met quite a lot of them, because a lot of them were very specific to you.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Do you know what? I'm trying to think who my favorite was. I mean, like Jim Rosenthal, all those guys. I was like, oh my God. They just had, like, it was like a footballer's dream, just like with all the guests that they have. You're like, how did you get this person? Like, how did you get these people? And they were all like such lovely people and just like up for anything, you know, which was fantastic. But I will say, yeah, we were very lucky with the guests that we got.
Well, you had Joseph Marcel playing your father.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was, I felt like Will Smith at times. I was like, this is great. You know, and you know, we'd do the scenes and he'd like, we'd like add lines and like mess around and stuff. And it was a lot of fun. He was such a great guy, such a great sport.
And not only that, but there were quite a lot of footballers as well as actors. I mean, the ones that are mentioned quite often are obviously Zola, Keown. I think you had Kirstie Keller once. I think Peter Shilton made appearances.
We had the 66 World Cup team.
Yeah. I mean,
that was like insane. We also had Chelsea girls. Not that they're famous footballers, but let me tell you something. These girls were incredible. Oh my God. I think we played them for a little bit and I was like, yeah, they're really good. But we're playing it off like, yeah, we're not going full out, obviously, because you're girls. So, like, you know, but no, they were incredible.
Was there ever a point, because your character did get behind the ball, so to speak, sometimes, but was there any point when you just wanted to jump in and play with them?
So the funny thing was that I was actually a footballer. Like when I was at school, my school teacher was a scout for Chelsea, and me and my dad supported Leighton Orient, and I was in the Leighton Orient School of Excellence. So my school teacher was trying to get me kicked out of there so I could join Chelsea. So I was like playing, I've been playing football all my life. So when I got that chance to play in the episode, I was like, oh, amazing. I finally get to play. Because, yeah, so I did want to play more, but they were like, no, get behind the camera. I was like, okay.
Quite an ironic thing, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. But then having said that, when we had a break from Rejects, I actually did Dream Team. So I got to fulfill all my football needs in that, which was cool.
Was that a different experience?
It was a completely different experience. And it's so funny because there was a competition, I remember, because Channel 4, around the time when we used to have the Big Breakfast show, and they were wanting to put a show in a certain slot, and it was out of Renford Rejects and Dream Team. And at that time, I was doing Dream Team. And they were all pissed off because they were like, oh, great, we didn't get that slot. Some show, Renford Rejects, got it. I was like, that's my show. So it was funny. But yeah, completely different experience because it was more of a soap, Dream Team was. So yeah, it's kind of different.
Yeah, I remember it being a little bit more intense in that way and paved the way for lots of other shows of a very similar vein.
Most definitely, yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. I mean, you were in those two football-related shows, which was interesting. And like you say, The Rejects was on Channel 4 for a little while. Why do you think it didn't really catch on terrestrial?
Do you know what? I'm not sure. Because I don't know if it was only for like a short amount of time they were going to show either Dream Team or Renford Rejects. Yeah, so I don't really know. I don't really know if it was like people just weren't into it, or it was only like they were only going to show stuff for like a couple of months or something.
I mean, it's certainly got a fan base now, isn't it?
It's so funny. Like everywhere I go, people are like, was you in a show called Renford Rejects? Like I went to an audition in America and the casting director was like, oh, my husband's a huge fan of yours. I was like, really? Yeah, he loved Renford Rejects. I was like, wow. I guess at the time we didn't know the impact the show would have. I remember one time being in Oxford Circus and Daniel Kaluuya, who's doing great, he's, you know, done Get Out and done all these big movies. And I remember I was coming out of this shop and he was like, yo, yeah, you was in Renford Rejects. I love that show, man. I was like, oh, cool. Thanks, man. And I was like, that's so, it was so weird. Because I didn't think that people were like, you know, were into it like that. But, you know, a lot of people grew up with the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a time and a place. And I'm so glad that they still repeat it now, because you don't realize quite just how many episodes there are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many. Did we do three seasons or four seasons?
Four.
Four seasons. But yeah, it's definitely a lot. It was that was like our summertime. Like every year you knew, okay, for the next like 8 weeks, 9 weeks, you know, we're doing Rejects.
You did venture away because there were a lot of kind of home sets, as it were. You did a lot of outside filming in the UK, but you also went abroad a couple of times, didn't you?
Oh, my goodness. I remember, we went to Sardinia and it was beautiful. Beautiful. And I remember there was one episode where I had, like, we're on the beach. I forget the name of the episode, but and Stephen, the director, was like, okay, every time you get this, and I had like a big speech, and he was like, every time you get it right, I'll add like another extra, like a beautiful girl to stand next to you every time you get it right. So I was like, okay. So I think I got it 12 times. So I had all these 12 beautiful women around me. It was fantastic. And then there was an episode where we were all on horses. And it's like the end of the episode, I guess we were like riding into the sunset. And Mohammed George, who joined in the last season, he took over from Stuart. And he was on his horse, and his horse went up and he fell off the back of it. And it was like a movie, like slow motion. And the horse came down and its feet just missed his head. And we were like, oh my goodness. And over the director was like, all right, cool, cut, let's go again. And we were like, no, Mo almost died. We're gonna stop for today. We're like freaking out.
Yeah. That is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, it was so crazy. So crazy.
I mean, did that sort of thing happen when you were at home?
What do you mean?
In the UK.
Well,
I mean, sort of moments where not necessarily someone nearly died,
right?
But you know, moments where accidents happen, because I'm sure they do.
I'm trying to. Oh, there was one time that was really funny. So the guy, Alex Norton, who played Eddie, I remember we were all doing a scene, and then Eddie, and he was like, "Oh, I just can't get it." And Stephen, the director, came in and was like, "It's not hard. Just get your lines." And they had this big argument, and we were like, "Oh my God, what's going on here?" But it was a joke. So they basically punked us. But it was so intense. We were like, "Oh, this is really awkward. Like, what's happening?" But then they were like, "Oh, we're just joking." And we're like, "Wow, that's pretty good acting." Even from the director, we were like, "That's great acting." We had no idea it was a joke.
That show had quite a young cast. And then you had, obviously, Alex Norton and Sally and Bill Homewood. Kind of, what did you learn from them? I'm sure it was quite a lot.
Oh, they were great. Sally was fantastic. She was such a sweetheart. She was so nice and so funny. And Alex Norton always had like stories for days. He always had stories to tell us. But he was just great. Like he just the way he embodied that character, and just like just watching him, I was like, yeah, this guy's a professional. You could tell like why he always doesn't stop working. You know, he's just very on top of it. Very on top of it. Bill was very funny as well. I like Bill because he's such a thespian. So yeah, I enjoyed Bill, and I loved like because his performance to me was quite theatrical, which I really enjoyed. Because I mean, I love like theatre and musicals and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed Bill a lot.
Yeah, it was definitely sort of a pantomimey type thing, and that double act thing that he had with Tom.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. Tom Anchorman. Tom was one of my favorites. Me and him, like you know, we hung out a lot individually, and Tom actually introduced me to R&B. Which is funny because, like I said, I was very much into musicals. And so I was listening to a lot of musical theater. And then like Tom was listening to R&B and he's like, "Yeah, man, you got to get into this." And I was like, "No, I'm going to stick with my show tunes." But then like and Tom's got a great voice as well. He's got a fantastic voice. You know, so we'd like sing duets together and all that stuff. But Tom Anchorweller, that's his nickname, Anchorman.
Excellent. What is your favorite musical?
Oh, that's, do you know what? Blood Brothers. Blood Brothers is one of my favorites. You know, I enjoy other shows as well, but there was just something about Blood Brothers. It was like a small cast. It was a small set, but the story was just so powerful. So yeah, that would always be my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, when you look back over your time on the Renford Rejects, is there like one thing that sticks out to you, one kind of memory that you'll always remember?
I can't say like one thing because the whole thing, I mean, for most of us, it was all our first like big job. So it was just like, it was magical from the beginning till the end. But, you know, I guess like by season three, we'd all kind of like grown and stuff. And like, we're even like more comfortable. So we were throwing in like private jokes and different things into episodes. And I watched some things, and there's some scenes with me and Martin, you know, like some private jokes that we'd like thrown into an episode. And there was one time when he did this thing and he pulled my hair and it's still in it. And you can see me like really laughing, but like trying to hide it. I forget what episode, I think it was the go-kart episode. But anyway, yeah, I don't have one specific thing. I think for me, it was all just great.
With it being, like you say, for many of you, kind of the big show that you all did, that it's kind of, I think it just rushes past you, doesn't it?
Most definitely. Most definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you make reference to you doing it in the summer. What were you doing the rest of the year?
It's funny because as well, like, so they would kind of put a hold on you. So, like, we finished the first season and then, you know, around January, February, they're like, "Oh, we're doing season two. So we're going to, like, put a hold on you from, I don't know, June till December or something or whatever." So I'd try and do other jobs. So I'd be doing like some of my dance stuff, like I'd, you know, dance some artists and all that. And then just go back. Oh, and then there was one time I was doing a movie called Virtual Sexuality. And I was, I remember it was day one on set. And then I got a call saying like, "Yeah, like you got to get back for rejects. Like they're not releasing you to do this." I was like, "What?" So yeah, so I had to like then leave that same day and go back and do rejects.
Did you feel put out by that at the time, or were you okay with it?
I think at the time I was like, because it was a movie. So I was like, this is my first like movie. Yeah. So I was a bit, I was put out. Yeah. I was like, ah, but you know, I love Redford Rejects. So I was like, it's fine.
After Rejects, looking down your list of credits, you went on to do Family Affairs, which, as some people will remember, is a Channel 5 a soap opera that lasted for a while.
That's right. And it's funny because, you know, I arrived there and then like Martin was like, you following me? Because Martin Delaney, Jason Summerbee was on it. So, so yeah, that was fun. That was fun, like reconnecting with Martin, but in a show that's a bit more serious and a bit more. And we were actually in the show, our characters became like really good friends as well, and we'd do stuff together. So that was quite fun.
Do you think that was conscious?
I don't know. But I definitely appreciated it. I was like, this is fantastic. Jason and Vinny back together. I think we may have thrown in some Renford Rejects stuff in there as well. In a scene, I think like we may have thrown some like again some private jokes.
Yeah, because I'm not sure how many times a week was that on.
I think it was on every day.
I had a feeling it was something like that because you could only get it in certain parts of the country because it was Channel 5. That's going into a soap opera. That must have been an increased amount of workload for you.
Yeah, it was. And I remember one day I'd forgot my scripts for the next day. And I thought, it's fine, I'll just come in early and just like whatever. And so I came in the next day and I had like four different scenes and they were all like 8 or 9 pages worth of dialogue. And I was like, oh my, how am I going to do this? And I was like freaking out. I was there at like 6 in the morning and I was like, we start shooting at like 7 something. So I remember doing the first scene and just like, and I got through it. They were like, cool, I'm going to go again. And then I just like kept on forgetting the lines. And by the 15th time, I could see the other actor getting a bit like frustrated. And then you know, the director and stuff was like, come on, let's get it. And then I had my next scene with this, my love interest in the show. And she kept on forgetting her lines. And I remember being frustrated because she only had like two lines. Like I had all the bulk of the dialogue and all she had to say was, so what happened next? And she kept on forgetting it. I'm like, come on. I've got all this like dialogue that I don't know to get through. You know what I mean? You've got one line and you can't do it. That's a, yeah.
Do you think the unique way that the Rejects filmed, do you think that helped you do that?
Oh, it most definitely helped, just because like all of my dialogue in Rejects, well, the bulk of it was by myself and doing like this, you know, the commentating. So it was always quite a bit of dialogue. So it definitely helped. Definitely helped with my pickup. When I got like new scripts for other things.
You've done loads of things since then. What have you done since, since the Rejects and Family Affairs?
Since then, I'm trying to think when I left for America. Because I left, I did quite a bit of theatre before I left. And then I left at the end of 2011, came out to America. But out here, I worked with J.J. Abrams on Cloverfield. I joined that universe, which was incredible. I did a another film called Here just before Christmas. I did a show called SEAL Team out here, and then a show called Too Old to Die Young as well, which has been great. And then now I'm waiting to hear back from this job that I could potentially start at the end of the year, which would be incredible. But we're just waiting to find out the logistics.
Yeah. Do you find that over there, do they film things differently? I know the director on the Rejects was American, so some of that might have come through, but is it a different experience working over there?
Yes. I mean, yeah, even with auditions, it's very different. Where in the UK, you go to an audition and like you have a chat before, and then like, how's your family? And like, do you have any questions? And then like, you talk about it. Over in America, it's very like quick. All right, Roger, cool, go. You're like, oh, so it kind of threw me off when I first moved out here, just because it was so much quicker. But in terms of filming, it depends what you're doing. Like the TV stuff, yeah, it's quite got a pace to it. But with the film stuff, it's a lot slower. A lot slower. You do like a lot more takes. And then especially with J.J. Abrams, like he shoots in a specific way. And so he does a lot of takes and a lot of different angles and kind of things. So yeah, it just depends on what you're doing.
I believe the Cloverfield, wasn't that a Netflix original?
Yes, it was, yeah. Do you know what? The first one's still my favorite. I remember seeing it like years ago and I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. So then when I got a chance to be a part of it, I was like, yep, sign me up.
I mean, that's some journey, isn't it? From Dancer on Top of the Pops to working with J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely is. But, you know, I've always wanted to live in America. It's always been on my radar, you know. Like, I was always grateful for the stuff that I did in London, but I always knew that there was more. And I guess I watched, like, growing up, I watched a lot more American TV. And I was like, yeah, I feel like there's like a lot more opportunity out there. And so that's part of the reason why I came out here.
Is there anything you miss from being in Britain?
Oh, absolutely. So the other day, I got a box full of Mr. Kipling's Cherry Bakewells. I got Monster Munch, Twirls, Boosts, all the chocolate, all the crisps, and some orange Lucozade.
Yeah, because it's slightly different over there, isn't it? They make things differently.
It's just not as good. It's not as good out here, like the chocolate and stuff. And sometimes you can get Cadbury stuff out here, but I'm like, it doesn't taste the same. And then you get one from back home, you're like, yep, there it is. There it is. And so, yeah, I always get people to send me stuff, even deodorant, which is like bizarre. But, you know, for a small can of deodorant out here, it's like $7. And then in London, you can get like a big one for like £1.50. And so I get people to send me deodorant all the time.
Well, there we are. But we're just, I mean, yeah, we've deviated slightly from the subject, but I'm sure the listener will forgive us for doing so. I find that fascinating when people move from the UK to America and the differences with that. Now, we just heard that you've gone from being on the Renford Rejects to working with J.J. Abrams on that Cloverfield film. And one question that I asked Bill and Tom, and I know that you've listened to the podcast so that you know basically what's coming here. You lived with the character for Vinny for like 4 or 5 years. What do you think he'd be doing now?
What would he be doing right now? I think he'd still be doing what he was doing. I think he might have opened up a school where like a presenter school. To train people up in it. And then I think like he might have an agency as well. He might have like a broadcasting agency where he just likes, you know, has his clients on like different like football stadiums or like presenting like TV shows and different things there. But yeah, he'll definitely still be in it, loving it.
Yeah. I mean, when Tom said that you lived in LA, I instantly thought, isn't that basically Vinny's life?
You did like to travel, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is fantastic, isn't it? That after all this time, we're still talking about that show. I'm sure that you didn't think when you were making it that we'd still be talking about it.
Yeah, we literally had no clue. We didn't know like how it was going to be received. And so the fact that, you know, people are still into it now is like incredible. I was talking to Tom the other day because Tom had been writing some stuff. You know, about his character and, you know, the younger. And so, yeah, I think we're all going to try and get together and try and, you know, maybe do some sort of show again, some sort of reunion or something. You know, I think people would like that. Get the old team back.
He did mention something about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'd be great. You know, I mean, I know that everyone would be on board, but I haven't seen Adam Dean for many years. I was trying to find him the other day on Facebook, but I couldn't find him. I still, you know, see Charlie, Tom, I still speak to, Martin, I still speak to. Matthew Leach was out here as well, who played Stuart. He was living out here as well. I'm not sure if he's still out here, though. And I'm friends with Holly on Instagram. and Megan as well. And I haven't seen Lucy Punch for a while as well. She's sometimes out.
Isn't she out there somewhere?
I don't know that she lives out here, but she definitely works out here. So I feel like she comes in for work, then goes back to the UK.
Once again, it's an absolute joy to talk to you because I've been a Rejects fan, well, since the start. I remember when it premiered, and it was a show I was completely obsessed with. And the funny thing is, and the listener will know this because I've talked about it many times, from school I went into the media. Basically. And I think the idea of the media was brought to my attention by Vinny.
No way.
So, yeah, I think so. So this is an extremely surreal moment for me because it's almost like the seed.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible.
It's been absolutely fantastic to speak to you. And I do wish you all the best with your upcoming projects. And thank you very much for being on the podcast today, Roger.
No, thank you. And I would love if maybe one time we could do like a Zoom with everybody and yourself.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Let's make it happen.
Well, what can I say other than thank you to actor Roger Davies for taking the time to talk to me, Jamie Dyer, for the 90s and Noughties UK podcast. And yeah, I will address the last thing that he said there. I haven't heard anything as of yet. We're working towards something you know, we'll see what happens in the future. I can't make any guarantees on that. But as you can tell by my reaction, I was speechless by it. Absolutely speechless, because it was my favourite show growing up. I still love watching those episodes now. And there was a great thread on the Renford Rejects Twitter page. I think it's a fan page. It's not official. It's a fan page. But there was a great thread on there about people's favourite episodes, and members of the cast started to contribute their favourite episode memories. And there was some amazing stuff on there, plus Bill Homewood's brilliant kind of tweetings of Stokerisms, which I always enjoy. Because, you know, why not? If you're a fan of the show, you're going to absolutely love it. And I'd like to say as well, thank you to Tom Weller for the support and for helping me to organise the interview that you've just heard. Because, yeah, it's right. You know, I'm right there when I say that he was one of the inspirations, Roger, for me getting into the media. He's one of the first people that I saw doing something like that, and I just love that show. And if you're listening thinking, well, you're probably never going to cover that subject again now, you've done it twice, no, don't worry, there will be more opportunities to talk about the legendary Renford Rejects TV show. Because, yeah, there is just so much to talk about. And it's the same with any subject that we cover here. If you hear it once, guaranteed at some point, you're going to hear it again. And I got questions midweek going, are you going to cover this? Are you going to cover that? It all depends who I get in contact with and who gets in contact with me. So if you're one of those people that is asking, when are you going to cover this? If you have enough knowledge or some memories that you'd like to share about it, feel free, come on and talk about it on the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, because that's what we're here for. That's the whole point. And once again, before we move on, thank you, Roger, for joining me. Now it's time for this. This is the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, and it's another edition of the Empty Compartment. Three questions, one guest, and really, the more random time we have, the better. And my guest today is Alan Snyder from the Booze Your Daddy podcast. Alan, thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. Tell us about your podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jamie. So my name is Alan Snyder. I actually am a doctor of physical therapy, or physiotherapy, as most of your listeners say. My podcast is called Booze Your Daddy, BOO'YOURDADDY. And it's a short, you know, we put out two episodes twice a week, 30 minutes, unscripted, me and a friend, me and a co-host, just telling a lot of stories about times we kind of made a mistake, something funny happened, little tips, little tricks. Maybe we play a quick round of trivia, but I don't have a problem laughing with myself. So people generally listen and go, wow, you really put your foot in your mouth all the time. And I do. But I don't think you get to a certain place in life without making a couple mistakes, and there you go. So I like to kind of document it and tell the stories along the way, and if I can make a couple people laugh, I'm happy.
Well, I can definitely highly recommend your podcast. It's a great listen, and all the best with it. Now, let's get on to the first question. Now, as you know, I first ask a question, then our guest does, and then we go to a listener question. So I'll ask you first, just to get the ball rolling. So this is, because you're in America, you're our first American guest, I like to go a little bit on the spontaneous side. So for this, you won't necessarily know what I'm talking about, but I want you to tell me the first thing that comes to your mind, okay? So if I was to say Andy Peters in the broom cupboard with Ed the Duck, would you know what I was talking about?
I would not. It sounds like the updated version of Clue, you know, Professor Plum in the library with the wrench. I do not know that.
No. Well, on the BBC in the early 90s, they used to have continuity in between all the programs on children's television. And one of the presenters was called Andy Peters. He's still around. He's turned 50 this year. And his co-host was a little puppet called Ed the Duck. And they used to do continuity in between the programs inside something called the broom cupboard, which was like a little continuity studio for announcers that had like children's pictures and stuff behind. Did you have anything like that in America?
When you say continuity, you mean just he was doing the stations, or he was kind of just, oh,
in between the programs? Yes.
You know, I don't, maybe on some of the children's networks, they had stuff and promos like that. I would say, I mean, here everything is about making money. So for regular television, it was commercials, commercials, commercials. Maybe they would plug, I guess they would more plug their own shows. You know, when you're watching the different networks, they would say, oh, and coming up here and coming up here. And God, you know, looking back on my childhood, of course, that sounds ridiculous, right? It says you had Andy Peters and you have the duck in a cupboard. That's kind of insane. You know, we had Sesame Street here. That was one of the bigger child shows for us growing. Did you guys have that?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have some friends who work there now, and it's a great show, and they've changed so much over the years. I don't know if I haven't watched it in forever, but nowadays they deal with harder issues. They deal with mom and dad getting divorced. They deal with, you know, dad was in jail. They had my friend is taking drugs, and now they actually have a special puppet who has she's on the spectrum of autism, which is one of the cooler things there. But as far as these different things in between, you know, I remember we had another show called Reading Rainbow, where it had, I believe it was the gentleman from Star Trek, the one Geordi LaForge who had the eye thing. And, you know, he always was kind of a little more quirky, but it was nothing so wacky. I think this is hysterical. I'm going to watch a video as soon as we're done recording, because I would love to see this. This is so British to me. I mean, for an American to hear this, this will be the thing I talk about for the next week with my friends.
Well, I hope so. And I hope it somehow seeps its way into the podcast. But there we go. You mentioned a couple of proper America, like legendary American shows. We didn't get Reading Rainbow here. We didn't get Mr. Rogers here either, because he was sort of the forerunner to Sesame Street and talking about those really serious issues. But we did get Sesame Street. It was broadcast here and still is on some paid station behind a paywall.
Here too. No, it's on, I think it's on HBO or one of the cable premium networks there. Did they do an accent for you guys, or you just got the regular voices?
We got the regular voices.
Okay, that's pretty good. Mr. Rogers here, I don't know if you saw, they just had that movie this past year. It's very interesting, and I watched it. There was a documentary, and there was the Tom Hanks, Matthew Reese movie, and both are very good, worth watching, and that guy was incredible. I mean, you watch these videos, you watch these documentaries, and you're waiting every other second to go, and then he touched a little kid, and then he beat his wife, and he didn't. He was one of the truly great people in the world that I guess I never gave that much credit to, but nowadays, with everything going on in the world, Black Lives Matter, you're starting to see that meme, that the picture of him and the African-American post office guy with their feet, and that was legendary, groundbreaking stuff. And I wasn't born back then, but that has become put on t-shirts these days. And I think that's a good message. I mean, it really is interesting. I'm very surprised that it didn't make it over to you guys.
And yet in the UK, nobody knows who it is. This podcast is about UK pop culture, and I'm surprised that Mr. Rogers is not part of it, but he isn't, sadly. But luckily, because that movie has made it over here, I very much look forward to it. And as a British person who discovered him quite late, even though it's for toddlers, essentially, I am very much an advocate for what he stood for. I love what he stood for. And pretty much some of the lessons that he taught I try and abide by myself, and I do recommend that my fellow Brits check him out, because it might be just a little toddler show, but it actually spoke much higher than that. So, yeah, let's move on to the second question, and it's your turn to go for this one. And just for any listeners, I haven't heard what it's about. I don't know anything prior, so if my response is unintelligible, you'll know why.
So I guess I even tried doing some research on this, but I'm just going to go with one of the things that I found as a staple of my childhood and embarrassing enough into my adulthood is fast food. So my big question for you, because McDonald's drives the bus over here, and I think that was pretty big for you guys. I'm curious what the Coke to the Pepsi for you, was it Burger King? Like growing up for you, I don't know if you were allowed or if you ate fast food, but were you a McDonald's person or what was the other big thing that you had?
I think most people would say McDonald's. There was McDonald's, there was Burger King. We had a place locally called Uncle Sam's that was quite big around certain areas. And then there was also Wimpy that was starting to die out. I don't know whether you have Wimpy in the United States. That's a very British thing. You basically sat down and had burger on an actual plate, you know, all plated up, extremely British. It sort of died down. There's a few of those around. But yeah, I think McDonald's was pretty much the king everywhere, although Burger King always seemed slightly higher quality to me. And I think it was the way they prepared it.
Yeah, they do the flame broiled on the grill. I actually grew up liking Burger King, and their barbecue sauce was very good. And it's funny you say that Uncle Sam. Do you know Uncle Sam to us is the picture of the old white? I mean, that's a funny name. I wonder if there's any connection there, whether we got it from you or you got it from us. So my follow-up then is about McDonald's is, what was your go-to order? I have to have this, because you know the number one thing there every year, year after year, is the Big Mac. And I have had zero Big Macs in my life. I find it to be not good at all. So I'm curious what you love.
Wait a minute. So you've never had a Big Mac?
You know, growing up, we always got the child's meals. It was the Happy Meals. And then I discovered along the way the fish fillet sandwich, the fillet of fish, whatever they call it. And now they make a double fish fillet. So it's not two sandwiches, but it's two patties on one. And that's my go-to order. I enjoy the chicken nuggets as well. But I was curious for what would be, because sometimes, you know, when you go to foreign countries, they have a special thing on the menu. You know, I went to Greece last year, and we wanted to have a McGyro, and we went to the one McDonald's in Santorini, and they looked at us like, they're like, dude, we have regular McDonald's food. We don't have anything special, any artesian blend. So I was curious what you grew up. What was your go-to meal?
Well, for me, it was Big Mac, certainly.
of course.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? And for one time, they did something called the McRib that was very nice. They had that for a while.
They bring that back here once a year, and it's a big thing, and I don't know. I can't eat it, especially because we have good barbecue here and there. But the McRib comes once a year. I couldn't even tell you when. They do the Shamrock Shake. That's the green milkshake. That comes obviously St. Patrick's Day in March. But they have these seasonal things. So you like the McRib and the Big Mac, of course. Very good.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you've never had a Big Mac.
It didn't appeal to me ever. I just, one of those, like, because it has that special sauce. And, you know, The Simpsons does a great bit on that. You know, they have their Krusty Burger, and they always joke and they say, oh, you know, we ran out of special sauce. Take some ketchup and mayo, mix it together, and then go leave it in the sun for a couple of hours.
Did you ever see that documentary, Super Size Me?
I have seen that documentary. That documentary is very big here, except every time I watch it, I want to go have McDonald's. I mean, I know I'm sitting there and I actually saw the other day, and I've been meaning to watch this, but Morgan Spurlock, who's the director of it, he did a couple spinoffs. They did some other things for 30 days, but they just released, and I think it's just, you can watch it on YouTube. It's called Super Size Me 2, and it's about the chicken wing epidemic. It's about fried wings, and that's been on my list of things to get to that I definitely want to go watch.
Well, I'll certainly put that on my watch list along with a million other things that I have right now. But we're in the middle of a nationwide lockdown, so I think I have plenty of time to do so. Thank you very much for asking that question. Let's go on to the listener question. This is asked by, obviously, a listener. And it comes from Jane. She says, can you name some 90s foods that you can't buy anymore?
You know, the only thing that comes to my mind, you know what a Rice Krispie is, right? Delicious Rice Krispie marshmallow butter. Well, at one point they made something called Rice Krispie cereal, And it was kind of like a dehydrated version of Rice Krispie Treats. And they put them into little squares and you just got it at the store. And I remember, I mean, of course, how bad is that for you? Terrible. But is Frosted Flakes Fruit Loops that much worse? No. It's, I mean, they're all dessert for breakfast. But that was one of my favorite ones growing up. And then the other thing that I do not know why they discontinued it. I do not know why they won't bring it back. But they made something called 3D Doritos. Do you remember those?
I don't know. But I did read up about them in preparation for this. I did read up, yes.
So you know what a Dorito is? Imagine if it just wasn't compressed. Imagine if there was air in the middle. So it kind of was, you know, the size of your, a little smaller than your fist, obviously. And it was a triangular shape. It had kind of air in the middle, not that it would come out, but it was a hollow Dorito. And it was fantastic. I really wish they'd bring those back.
See, that sounds really weird. I'd be kind of disappointed because there'd be nothing in the center.
Well, I don't know what you would put in the center, but of course, I'm sure they'd end up adding some nacho cheese or some extra flavor, or knowing Americans, we'd put some fried chicken or something in there and turn it into a sandwich.
Yeah, quite possibly. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that's sort of been discontinued. I know they used to have sort of branded cereal that perhaps doesn't exist anymore. We used to get like Flintstone cereal and stuff like that, but I can't think of anything that doesn't really exist anymore, because I think unless it was like a massive thing, I think a lot of products usually disappear because they weren't popular.
Yeah, no, they had Crystal Pepsi, was they had that here. That was just Pepsi without the coloring. So it kind of looked like a Sprite looking thing. That was big for a little bit. And then we had a whole Coke thing where it was Coca-Cola Classic. Of course, going back into the days, Coca-Cola had actual cocaine in it. And then they made Coca-Cola Classic. And then they made something called New Coke. And if you watch, I think Stranger Things, the show on Netflix, they kind of allude to it because it was the early 80s thing where it was New Coke. And then that didn't do well, the new recipe. And I've been to the Coca-Cola factory in Atlanta, Georgia here. And they talk very specifically about the secret recipe, the original recipe, because now when you order and when you look at a label, it says Coca-Cola Classic to separate New Coke. So they discontinued that because it was not good. But Crystal Pepsi was something, but I don't think people miss Crystal Pepsi. But the 3D Doritos, to the lords up there, bring 3D Doritos back. I will gladly eat them.
Well, there we are. I think that's the final word on that particular subject. Bring back 3D Doritos. That comes to the end of this segment of The Empty Compartment. But thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me so much, Jamie. I appreciate it.
Always enjoy doing that segment. And once again, thank you to Alan Snyder, Dr. Alan Snyder, for joining me on that edition of The Empty Compartment. And you will be hearing some more Alan in maybe a couple of weeks' time, depending on how things fall in episodes, because I don't always plan what week is going to be what. It's very slapdash sometimes. So do listen out for him in the future. And check out his podcast as well, because it's a decent podcast. I enjoy it. It's great fun. And hopefully at some point in the future, I'm going to be a guest on there. So listen out for that as well. And if you are listening to that and you'd like to be a guest on The Empty Compartment, it's all improvised. There are no particular subjects that we're focusing on, because that seems to be what people are kind of frightened about when they come on these things. It's all improvised. There's not really any kind of preparation beforehand, and you can be a podcaster or a radio presenter or somebody in the media, or you can just be a fan of the period. Whatever your situation may be, I do want to hear from you. So please do email us, 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet at 90snoughtiesuk on Twitter, or go to the Facebook page, which is just simply 90sandnoughtiesuk, and let me know whether you'd like to be on a future edition of The Empty Compartment. And one thing that I do say is that if you want to be a guest on the show, I usually record, say, one, maybe two episodes, and they normally run at about 15 minutes each, save for editing and stuff. So, you know, if that interests you, please do let me know. Now for a brand new feature, and it's something that I've been working on for some time. Wasn't quite sure whether anyone would come forward for something, because it's quite a short feature, but luckily they have. And I'd like to say thank you to Hayley for being the first person to try out this new feature, because I'm always coming up with things, you know, always coming up with features and stuff, and I never quite know if it's going to land. But luckily, on this occasion, it landed. And I can tell you at this moment in time, there's going to be at least two editions of this, because I recorded two sessions with Hayley. She loved it so much the first time, she said, I'll do it again. So without further ado, here is the quick fire quiz on the 90s and Noughties UK podcast. And now it's time for a new feature on the 90s and Noughties UK podcast. It's the attentively titled Quick Quiz. That's right, 90 seconds to answer 90s and Noughties pop related questions, just pop music related questions at this time, not pop culture. And we're joined once again by regular Hayley. Thank you very much for joining us. How is your pop knowledge from this period?
I'd say it's quite good, yeah. We'll have to see what happens, won't we? So
we will. This is the first time that I've done it. So some of the questions I've tried to... half of it will be relatively easy, although it's only easy if you know the answer, and the other half is probably a little bit more difficult. And there's a range of different questions here. I'll try and explain it as we go along. So I will start in just a moment. Are you ready?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, so we've got 90 seconds to answer some pop-related questions of the 90s and noughties, starting now. Right, what was the name of Step's debut single?
5678.
Correct. How many members of 911 are there?
Three.
Okay, who won the first series of the BBC's Fame Academy?
David Sneddon.
Correct. Complete this Craig David lyric. Rewind when the crowd say...
Bo Selector.
Correct. A1 did the song Take On Me, but who sang the original?
Uh-huh.
Correct. King of My Castle was number one for which act in 1999?
Wham Do Project.
Correct. Who is the lead singer of Pulp?
Oh, I know that
as well.
Can I come back to it?
You can pass.
I have to pass it.
Okay. What was the name of Lady Gaga's debut single?
Just Dance.
Correct. Which two girl groups teamed up to perform Walk This Way for comic relief?
Girls Aloud and Sugar Babes.
Correct. Which pop singer had hits with Big Boys Don't Cry and Mickey?
Lolly.
Correct. And we've just hit the 30 seconds. So that's that. Let me just count up the amount of correct answers that you had there. How was that for you?
Yeah, fine. I'm just annoyed that I can't think of Pulp's.
Okay, well, the one answer that you missed there, who is the lead singer of Pulp? The answer, Jarvis Cocker.
Yeah,
Okay, so the name of Step's debut single, obviously, 5678, correct on that. And then on there, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So, yeah. 9. There are 9 correct answers. That gives you a total of 9 points. And you're our first person. At the moment, you're currently in the lead. If that means anything, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it also depends on if we have anyone else who wants to come forward. So if you're interested in taking part in this quick quiz for the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, do get in contact via social media and email and all that stuff. So yeah, how was my reading? Was I okay there?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it was good.
Okay, that's good. Well, thank you for joining us on this on this feature.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the 90s and Noughties UK podcast with me, Jamie Dyer, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. And once again, thank you very much. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can. You can email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. That's 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. You can tweet us at 90snaughties UK on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook page. And, well, that's just simply called 90sandnoughties UK. I'll see you same time, same place next week for another episode.